the nation's capital. This is DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. We're talking today about housing and offender reentry. Back in our microphones, the Urban Institute, always happy to have them by our microphones. Jocelyn Fontaine is a senior research associate, www.urban.org. She has a piece of research, supportive housing for returning offenders. It was an evaluation in the state of Ohio with the state prison system. It was done in conjunction with a corporation for supportive housing, and the results are really going to surprise you. I really am pleased to welcome to our microphones Jocelyn Fontaine, Senior Research Associate, Urban Institute. Jocelyn, welcome to DC Public Safety.
Thank you for having me.
I really am happy to have you because this is a very important topic. We talk about offender reentry a lot, and we talk about substance abuse, and we talk about mental health, and we talk about jobs, but rarely do we ever talk about housing. And you have some really interesting findings. So give me a background, some background on the project and the research.
Absolutely. So a few years ago, around 2006 and 2007, the state prison system in Ohio partnered with the Corporation for Supportive Housing on a supportive housing pilot. Mm-hmm. They were looking for a way to get folks who are leaving their system into housing,
right.
And wanted to partner with the Corporation for Supportive Housing, who does this work, to help them to figure out how can we get folks into housing in the community based on the assumption that if we get people into housing, they can get linked up to the services that they need.
Right.
They're better able to find and maintain jobs, and
right.
we can also reduce recidivism, which is costly for the state and, of course, is a public safety concern. So they partnered on this supportive housing pilot, which was focused on those who would benefit the most from supportive housing.
Right.
So that is individuals with histories of residential instability as well as behavioral health challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And they started out with wanting to house about 84 people coming out of the state prison system. This
right.
was statewide. It was first implemented in 10 correctional institutions, and then they expanded it to 3 more, so it was 13 total.
Mm-hmm.
And they housed far more than the 84 that they initially intended to.
Oh, how many did they house?
They housed, in our pilot or the evaluation that we did, there were more than 118 or so folks.
Wow.
But they housed far more than that, and it's in fact still going on
That's
today,
right.
so they're still housing folks. But they house far more than 100 folks into supportive housing in 5 of the larger cities in the state of Ohio. So
mm-hmm.
that was Columbus, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Toledo, and Dayton.
Right.
And in fact, like I said, people are still housed in the program, and it's got some pretty good findings.
Well, the findings are astounding because I've spent a career looking at recidivism research, and we at the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency like to think that we are a research-based agency. See, we all read the research and discuss the research. These are some of the most significant findings I've ever heard in terms of recidivism. So you were able to find a certain percentage reduction in rearrest and a certain percentage reduction in reincarcerations. Tell me about them, please.
Sure. So we're pretty proud of the evaluation that we were able to do. It was a quasi-experimental design, which essentially meant that we expected the interest in the housing pilot to exceed their ability to house people,
mm-hmm.
especially since it was implemented in 13 institutions.
Mm-hmm.
So what we wanted to do was a natural comparison group, and that is get folks who looked similar but weren't able to be housed by the pilot due to the limitations that they had in only having 84 housing beds.
Sure.
So that was our comparison group, so individuals who looked like those who got the housing but weren't able to because of the capacity of the program. We tracked those folks for a year following their release,
mm-hmm.
And we found that the RHO participants, and that stands for the Returning Home Ohio,
yes.
That's the pilot project, that the RHO participants were significantly less likely to be rearrested within 1 year. We found that the participants were 40%, in fact, less likely to be rearrested than the comparison group subjects. And we also found that the participants in the RHO program were significantly less likely to be reincarcerated, which is one of the more interesting findings for the state prison system, since, of course, they want to reduce rearrest, but they're
sure.
mostly interested in people coming back into the prison system.
Well, then that was a 60% reduction in reincarcerations, right?
They were 60% less likely
less
to be reincarcerated within
right.
1 year, yeah.
No, that's amazing, Jocelyn, because you take a look at offender reentry research across the board. And just last week, we had Nancy Levine of the Urban Institute, the famous Nancy Levine, at these microphones. And we were talking about the fact that most of the research projects that measure offender reentry probably go in the 10 to 20% range when they are successful. Not all are successful. Mm-hmm. It would be naive to believe that every piece of research out there, every effort out there is going to reduce recidivism. Some research studies show that they don't. The ones that do seem to run in that 10% to 20% range. Having a 40% reduction in rearrest and having a 60% reduction in reincarcerations is astounding.
Yeah, well, we're talking, just to make sure that we're clear, so we're talking about the likelihood that they're going to be rearrested and reincarcerated. But we are very proud of the outcomes, very proud of the findings, especially since we only had a one-year window to look at outcomes.
Right.
And that is important to mention because not all of the folks who were in the treatment group or that got the housing got the housing for a full year that we looked at their outcomes.
Right.
So we'd expect actually the benefits of the program to be even greater once we're able to look at a longer outcome period. And I'm currently working with the state prison system and the Corporation for Supportive Housing to continue to track folks because we found, and something that I think is also interesting to talk about is even though we had interested participants and interested providers in making this seamless link from release from prison to supportive housing in the community, we found that it wasn't that seamless, that it took some time to get people into the housing upon release. So all that's to say that once we feel that people are actually having the housing itself for one full year or longer, that we'd find even greater reductions in the recidivism rate and even greater benefits.
There are endless questions that are running through my mind in terms of process and how it began and how you were able to convince landlords to bring people from the state prison system into homes that they rent. But, you know, this gets to the larger issue of recidivism across the board. And we need to mention, I think we talked about before the show, the fact that they've received other services as well. So there were not housing. There were a variety of stabilization services that I think dealt with substance abuse and mental health.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Tell me about those.
So this was a group that ranged from, I guess, relatively low need to high need. So what this program was able to do, and I'm quite proud of them for doing that, was house a range of folks with different needs.
Right.
Now, supportive housing is supposed to be target for those individuals at the higher need level.
Yes.
But there were some people in the housing who had lower needs and lower or less significant histories of substance abuse and mental illness. So all that's to say is that what the program did was working with providers so that they would assess individual need once they came into the program and determine what services do they need as part of their supportive housing suite of services. So supportive housing can range from just having a case manager to more wraparound services, linkage to employment, to the extent that that's feasible and appropriate, as well as recovery services, a whole range of things that go into supportive housing on top of the provision of affordable housing. And we also looked at, as you mentioned, whether people were getting linked up to services, and we found that those individuals who are part of the program were significantly more likely to use state billable mental health and substance abuse services and more quickly. So that is a great finding of this project is that especially if we're thinking about the folks who were in the program as being previously under or unserved, that they are getting linked up to the mental health and substance abuse services that they need, more likely to get linked up to those services and receiving more of those services.
Which is the way of measuring the various services to see if housing was the key variable, or whether it's substance abuse or job assistance or mental health evaluation, was there a way of ferreting out discrete variables to the degree of saying, hey, it was 10% substance abuse and 10% housing and 5% mental health. I would imagine that would take a tremendous piece of research to do that. But were you able to do that?
We weren't. And that's actually an excellent question. So this story, it's a great one, but it's also a story, I guess, like other research, of variation. So we had various types of offenders come through this program. And then we also had various providers providing the service. So the providers were across the five cities, as I mentioned. Mm-hmm. They were a mix of both scattered site and single site housing agencies. So that is, they either managed or maintained a large building of affordable housing, of which the former offenders were part of that housing building. Two agencies that worked with landlords and said, hey, we're providing the housing, or we'll pay for the housing. Will you allow this person, Jocelyn Fontaine, to live in your housing building?
Right.
The agencies also ranged in the type of services that they offered. Some, it was primarily just case management services and referrals to other agencies for things, all the way to one agency that really provided a range of services. It was a requirement of participation in their program that they, they participate in a lot of services. So putting all of that into one regression, one statistical model, we're not able to tease out the relative benefits of the type of services that folks got, but that just calls for more research, and we're happy to do that. And it's a good thing, too, to see that even with all of this variation that you know, the program still stuck. That that meant that the providers got it right, that the program itself was able to match individuals to the housing services pretty well, or else we probably wouldn't have had the findings that we had.
Jocelyn, I'm going to want you to take off your methodological hat and put on your opinion hat now.
Okay.
What do you think is that impact of having stable housing? Parole and probation agencies throughout this country routinely report that a third of the people who they supervise are in unstable housing. It may be a shelter. It may be on the street. It may be, you know, you're at your mom's house, but your mom said, hey, 2 months and you're out.
Yep.
Then they shift over to their brother. He and the brother get into an argument. Then he shifts over to his sister. You know, brother-in-law is not terribly happy about this. Then he shifts over to a girlfriend. They break up. I mean, housing seems to be a key issue for an awful lot of offenders. And so what this research suggests is that it may be more important than we originally thought.
I think that's right. As a housing person, I think it's very important. You know, if you get an employment reentry person, they're going to say the jobs. But I like to think of housing as both the figurative and literal foundation that successful reentry can be launched. So it is my opinion that if someone doesn't have stable housing, it's difficult for them to find and maintain employment. If a person is worried about where they're going to sleep that night, it's difficult for them to maintain their sobriety or continue on their regimen for mental health services, for example. So I think it is extremely important. And if, you know, someone doesn't have a place to sleep, if they're worried about their housing, I think it's difficult for them to think also about, you know, finding a job, being able to go to that job every single day, maintain good hours, having the clothing that they need in order to be successful in that job, having the rest that they need if they're, you know, worrying about where they're going to lay their head. So I think we need to think of housing as a platform for successful reentry. Not only is it, you know, a good thing to get people into housing, but thinking of housing, again, as that platform. So once people are into stable housing, and it doesn't necessarily have to be supportive housing, right? It's affordable housing, an appropriate housing placement, then folks can begin to be more successful on these other outcomes like job, reducing their substance use, getting medications for physical or mental health, reunifying with their family and friends.
Several offenders have told me throughout my career that the housing component to them was one of the most important parts of coming out. That and supportive friends, supportive family, and this is why I think the faith-based program that we run and volunteer programs that try to mentor to people coming out of the prison system become so important, that it was a it was a quiet place to go and be by themselves, and to provide a it provides a certain sense of stabilization in the psychological well-being of their lives. I mean, they just said, my God, I mean, after being in prison and being around people all the time, and then you go over to my brother's house, and I was over there with his family, and you have no privacy, and suddenly you have the ability to sleep when you want, to think when you want, to contemplate life, that they found it to be psychologically comforting, and a psychological comfort level that allowed them to do the certain things that they had to do. So am I in the ballpark, or am I being Pollyannish about this?
No, I think that sounds about right. That's how we think of our own housing, right?
Yes, that's exactly right. That's exactly
so
right.
So we should expect that from other folks as well. And it's just, you know, when we release folks without proper housing placements, and it makes sense that people rely on their family mostly in the, you know, the initial days of their release. But we need to be honest that sometimes that's not the best housing placement. And we've found in some of the work that Nancy Levine has done, and we've continued to do in more recent reentry evaluations, is that people would like to be able to have their own place and to not have to rely on their family so much, and have acknowledged, you know, which I think is quite honestly, that it's not the best place. It's not, you know, the best place to go is back with family and heavily relying on them, and perhaps not being able to support your family in the way that you should in order to be able to stay living in their housing. So it makes sense to me that there's these psychological benefits of housing.
We're more than halfway through the program. Our guest today is Jocelyn Fontaine. She is the Senior Research Associate with the Urban Institute, www.urban.org, www.urban.org. Housing and offender reentry is the topic of today's program. She did a piece of research with others called Supportive Housing for Returning Prisoners, a program in Ohio that has astoundingly wonderful results, reduced rearrest by 40%, reduced reincarcerations by 60%. Jocelyn, was 700,000 people coming out of the state and local prison systems, state and federal prison systems every single year. 700,000. That's just an immense number of human beings that are transitioning from the prison system to the state levels and transitioning to federal parole and probation authorities like mine. You know, the states are screaming bloody murder about their budgets, and they're saying they're reducing incarcerations, they're closing prisons, they're trying to come to grips with trying different things to reduce the rate of reincarceration, reduce the rate of recidivism, because A, it cuts back dramatically on criminal victimization, but B, to them, I think more importantly, it cuts back on how much money they have to spend.
Exactly.
And that's a reality for governors throughout this country. I've maintained that governors have had this conversation with every state correctional administrator in the country, that you've got to learn to live within your budgets, and you've got to learn to find a way to reduce the amount of people coming back. This seems to hold some promise. This seems to hold something that people should consider.
Yep, and I want to give credit to the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Correction for, you know, very much going out on a limb and funding this program and funding the research. Don't know if we mentioned that, but that's pretty progressive and innovative to let's see if this housing sticks, and then waiting it out to see. As I mentioned earlier on, this started in 2006. We just finished the research just a couple of months ago. So their you know, willingness to participate in a research study, to put themselves under scrutiny, to allow us to come in to look at their data and see what happens, I think is a credit to them, that they're, you know, a progressive state that's willing to look at this in a different way.
And Ohio Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation has been a progressive entity for over the course of the last quarter century. They've always seemed to be taking a lead in terms of taking a look at how they operate and what the impact is. Jocelyn, what are the policy implications of all of this? The average person sitting here in Washington, D.C., the average person listening to this program in New York City and Honolulu and San Francisco, they're going to take a look at their housing situation in those particular cities, which are some of the most expensive cities in the world. Mm-hmm. And they're going to say, wait a minute, giving housing to people coming out of the prison system, I can't even find housing for my kid. Yeah. And I desperately want my own kid to get out of my own house, but he or she can't afford it. And here we are providing arrangements, making arrangements, in some cases paying for them. To find supportive housing upon release from the prison system. So what are the policy implications? What are the practical lessons that governors and mayors and county executives and parole and probation administrators can pull from this?
I think one is that collaboration and partnerships are a good thing and that they work. The state prison system didn't go it alone here. They worked with an agency that has a history of doing this, that has helped jurisdictions across the country. And in fact, they're doing this work in other places beyond Ohio. So working with the Corporation for Supportive Housing to say, look, we're releasing these guys. Some of them are appropriate for supportive housing. Help us figure out how to make it work. Mm-hmm. The Corporation for Supportive Housing is, you know, knows, hey, there's these community-based providers that are providing this service to people in the community, right?
Right.
And that there's a percentage of them that have these criminal justice histories. They're there, right?
Right.
700,000 people. You just mentioned
yes.
the number.
Every year.
And that means that's a lot of people who are in the community that are receiving supportive housing with these criminal justice histories.
Yes.
So what they've tried to do is just say, let's extend this. So these agencies are already doing this work. The prison system is releasing people. So let's just make that linkage a little bit more seamless so that they can extend or reach into the prisons to get these guys, and then therefore we'd have better reentry outcomes. So I think that's a lesson that you already have agencies in your communities mm-hmm. doing this work. They're already providing supportive housing. They're already doing it. So why don't we just toward better outcomes so that these guys aren't hitting the community with no housing placements, nowhere to go, see if it works, you know, see if we can create this linkage. And, you know, if the Department of Corrections, they were willing to spend this money, Ohio was willing to do it,
right.
knowing that if we spend it now, that's savings that we'll get later because they're not coming back,
right.
then it's a worthwhile investment. And, of course, that's for jurisdictions to decide on their own, but it was beneficial in Ohio.
And also the savings in terms of criminal victimizations.
Exactly.
I mean, you have a situation where if you could produce 40% fewer arrests, 60% fewer reincarcerations, I mean, that would save tens of billions of dollars over the long run in terms of every state in the country. But you can see how difficult it is because the average person is going to say to themselves, wait a minute, I can't afford housing. Why are you giving it to people coming out of the prison system? The flip side of that is that it saves people from being victimized, and it saves taxpayers a tremendous amount of money.
Exactly. And there's other small things that can be done, right? So here in this program, the state prison system was actually funding the housing. But there's other things that can be done just by a prison system creating more information for returning prisoners about available housing placements, mm-hmm. right? And it doesn't have to be a situation in which the correctional department is paying for all of someone's rent. It
right.
could be a percentage, right?
right?
That gets phased out over time as a person gets linked up to more gainful employment.
And the percentage may be just enough to tip the scale.
Exactly. Exactly.
It may be just enough to get that person in a supportive housing and to dramatically increase the chances of the person
getting
doing well,
yep.
getting a job, becoming a taxpayer, not a tax burden, and especially if they're linked to other supportive services like mental health
and substance abuse
treatment and job services. But the the other part of it is that they come back into these same communities, and people sit there and go, well, you know, I'm not close to those communities. That doesn't mean anything to me. But one out of every 42 people in the United States are under the auspices of who are actively being supervised by a parole and probation agency.
Yep.
So what I say to people is that you come into contact every single day with people on supervision by a parole and probation agency. You just don't know it. Some criminologists, I've heard to figure 1 in 20, and I have no documentation on 1 in 20. They just gave their opinion in terms of people who have been caught up in the criminal justice system in the past. But everybody, every single day, comes into contact with people who have been caught up currently or in the past with the criminal justice system. So I guess my question is that, do you want them coming out with support so they won't reoffend and so you won't have to pay for them again or not? What's your comfort level?
If the person
comes out of the prison system with mental health problems, don't you want that person to receive mental health treatment?
Exactly.
And doesn't that protect you and your family and your kids and your neighbors and your friends?
Yep, and we've heard that from landlords as part of this housing study or even employers as part of other reentry evaluations that we've done who've said, you know, these guys or these gals in this program are better than the other folks that, you know, that I'm employing because they have a case manager, because they're part of a program,
yes,
because someone's watching, not over them, but helping them out, that
yeah,
they have somebody, some support system, someone that's focused on their reentry goals. And so, you know, just like you said, I, you know, without a doubt, these folks are coming back. And so if, you know, we can provide them with some supports, you know, I think that that goes a long way towards better reentry outcomes so that people aren't coming back into the system.
It's my guess that an employer is going to be far more prone to hire somebody if they have stable housing. It's my guess that in a discretionary world where people go in and get drug treatment, you know, it is discretionary. I mean, people do choose who gets drug treatment and who doesn't. And I would guess that people would be more prone or more apt to say, yes, let's provide this person with drug treatment. He has stable housing. We're not going to have to worry about him wandering the streets. We're not going to have to worry about him deteriorating because he has no place to go. It just seems to be a plan. Platform for other good things to happen in that person's life, which is why I'm guessing, and I think you're guessing the same thing, that we have a 40% reduction in rearrest and a 60% reduction in reincarcerations.
Absolutely.
And that, you know, that platform just, that just absolutely intrigues me. Final words, we're in the final 3 minutes of the program, Jocelyn. So we talked about policy implications, we talked about landlords, we talked about mayors considering this sort of a program. They need to get beyond, do they not, the fear that they may be criticized for mm-hmm. providing housing for people coming out of the prison system? Again, considering that there's a lot of people who can't afford housing to begin with?
Yeah, I think, you know, here's the public campaigning that mayors and other public officials need to do is what you said earlier, realizing that it may not be your brother or your sister or someone in your family member, but it is likely to be someone in your community. And so realizing that these folks are coming back, that we're paying for them in one way or another, that we do well to be paying for them in a strategic and a smart way and a known to be effective way, other than, you know, thinking it's not my problem and I don't have to deal with this. I don't have to pay for it. And the fact is that you do. And so when people are rearrested and reincarcerated, we are certainly paying for it. So we do well to think more strategically about what's more effective use of our taxpayer dollars.
There are 5 to 10 minute drive from 70%, 80% of anybody living in any metropolitan area.
Definitely.
When I was with the Maryland Department of Public Safety, I was well-known because I did a lot of television work, and you wouldn't believe all the different people caught up under supervision who would greet me
yeah.
and say, Mr. Sipes, how are you doing? I saw you on television. Yeah, I'm in from this pre-release system, and I'm working here. And it's like, wow, you don't know how many people
yeah.
were delivering your pizza, filling your
exactly.
gas tank, handling your order, helping you out, doing your lawn care, doing your maintenance work, who were caught up in the criminal justice system.
Yeah.
You just don't know.
And that's the sad part.
But. Yeah. And having them having supportive housing and having them have supportive services does seem to make a difference.
Yep.
not necessarily as high as your difference, but nevertheless to make a difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Jocelyn, you've got the final word. Our guest today, ladies and gentlemen, Jocelyn Fontaine, Senior Research Associate with the Urban Institute, www.urban.org. We'll have a link to the document that she references, Supportive Housing for Returning Prisoners. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. We really do appreciate all the comments. We appreciate your criticisms. We appreciate your suggestions for new shows, and we want everybody to have themselves a very, very pleasant day.